content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Well, hello there. This is Fred Brack reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And now we return to the January 2022 edition of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. The theme this month, appropriately enough, is Winter Welcome. And we're going to read a winter story to start, and probably one or two more after that. This one is entitled Winter Welcome, just like it says on the cover. And now we wait. Will January bring snow, sleet, or freezing rain? Big, puffy flakes for sledding and snow cream, or a crystalline coat of ice for every pine bough. In North Carolina, the skies can surprise us. Written by Susan Stafford Kelly, and here is a cover picture. There's a beautiful winter scene on a road going by a house. Everything is covered with snow. There's some tread marks from automobiles and maybe some people over there on the side. Not really sure what left those marks. The trees themselves are covered with snow or ice. The sun is filtering through the trees. And on the left, it says, on a rare snowy day in Charlotte, 3-year-old Kate Lucido and her mom squeezed in a morning sled walk before the sun melted their winter wonderland. Farther west and several thousand feet higher, snow is clearly a certainty on Beach Mountain, which was the picture I described a moment ago. But here, 3-year-old Kate is seen from behind. She's on a sled, but this sled has a band, sort of a semicircular band, raised up about 6 inches along the back edge to form a seat, and she is snuggled into that seat with her pink and white sweater and a white ski cap with a big bob on top. January in North Carolina. The month when winter weather watchers and winter weather waiters go on high alert. The watchers dread. The waiters yearn. All eyes focus on the forecast. When mere degrees of temperature change and mere mention of precipitation send both camps into an anticipatory dither. Or to put it another way, those who wonder, should I get more bread? And those who wonder, should I get out the sled? The kicker, though, the tricky, confounding, problematic issue of North Carolina winter weather is just what the weather will be. Snow, sleet, or the elusive, difficult to define, freezing rain. Word-wise, sleet sounds pretty, but of all of our permutations of precipitation, it's the dullest. Sleet begins in the heavens as snow and changes into ice pellets on its journey downward. Sleet is just cold, gray ice dust, so low on the ladder of snow wishing and hoping and fearing that it barely deserves a mention. A red-headed stepchild of summer hail, sleet rarely accumulates, doesn't stick or stick around, and won't get you out of school or work. Still, sleet sounds lovely hitting bricks and mailboxes and ivy. A million tiny pick, 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 picks. We'll give it that. If you're going to dread something, dread freezing rain, a shorthand term for water falling from the sky that might turn into ice when it meets cold asphalt. You can't see rain freezing. You can't hear it. You can't play in it. And heaven knows you can't drive on it. because freezing rain, unfortunately, tends to turn into an ice storm, winter weather's most unwelcome arrival. If we're unlucky, wires sag, trees topple, and the electricity goes. You discover what's in all of those containers at the back of your freezer, pile on multiple sweaters, and go to bed at 8 with the final flickering of the flashlight's exhausted batteries. When the power crew arrives, laden in loops of cables, you take them pizza or chili that you've been heating on the grill, sobbing with gratitude. Still, when daylight dawns and the sun rises over a landscape sheathed in ice, who doesn't marvel at that fragile, ethereal sight? Look up toward branches and bird feeders and overhangs. The world glitters and spangles so brightly that it hurts the eyes. Every holly and camellia leaf is made glossier, greener, shinier beneath a layer of clear glaze. Railings and gutters dangle icicles, or a row of perfect droplets frozen in mid-drop. The skinniest naked twigs wear a crystalline coating. With a breeze, branches click and crackle against each other as if complaining of creaky joints and hurtle their delicate casings downward. Children try to ease ice, thick as paned glass or thin as plastic wrap, from terrace tables and car windshields in single sheets. When the ice man cometh, sprinkle the rock salt, sure, but admire the wonder in its fleeting, brittle beauty. Given the options, the ouch, slippery slope of winter weather, wouldn't you rather, after all, choose snow? The white stuff, the right stuff, the stuff dreams are made of. Decades of North Carolina winters have taught us that January is the month when snow lovers and loathers can realistically begin their annual vigil for the big one. No delicate flurries or polite dustings, please. No may stick on bridges and overpasses either. We're waiting on that minimum 5-incher, ample enough for snowmen and sleds, and that yearned-for foot-deep monster, a dumper, a day-longer, a consistent descending curtain of thin, minuscule flakes or fat, heavy ones. During daytime, if possible, for the window gazers to enjoy, cozied up in a throw and thick socks. Everywhere, in big city skyscraper canyons or prairie expanses, snow flies. Here in North Carolina, it mostly, thankfully, just falls. You're one of a kind, lucky, if you live in a neighborhood where youngsters and the young at heart pass by all day, headed for the hills, dragging every kind of snow conveyance imaginable, saucers, sleds, tubes, discs, mats, and calling to one another, making that joyful noise that accompanies every snowfall. We could learn a thing or two about dealing with winter weather from children. You're another kind of lucky if you live in the country, where the silence granted by snowfall is so deep, the stillness so profound, it's as though you're living on another planet. Barns are starker, fences are softened, animals are unfazed. We could learn a thing or two about dealing with winter weather from cows and dogs and horses, too. Snow is nature's tangible, if temporary, gift of forgetting and burying and blotting out our human obligations and strivings. To borrow a lyric from the American folk song canon, where have all the winters gone? It's just me and my nostalgia. Or were they in decades past bigger, better, longer, colder, and snowier? Still, if snow hope didn't spring eternal, I'd have moved to Colorado or Canada long ago. Because in North Carolina, as in most of life, winter weather is about expectations versus reality. Expecting snow, getting ice, expecting sleet, getting rain, praying that there will be, praying that there won't be. So you watchers and waiters, loathers and lovers, haters and hopers, manage the dread, temper the delight. All together now, watch the sky, watch the forecast, watch the app that reads, precipitation will begin in 22 minutes. Let's see what happens. And now, the art of snow. The white stuff that blankets North Carolina's slopes during ski season may not be nature-made, but as one writer discovers, it's as real and beautiful as the flakes that fall in front yards across the state. Written by Scott Hewler. And there's a picture here of a snowmaking machine blowing snow with some skiers on a lift in the background. The photograph is the same as one that you have from years ago, I'm sure. Three of us stand together arm in arm in front of the Snow Ski Lodge fireplace, Sugar Mountain Ski Resort, and good Lord, it's 30 years ago. We're wearing jeans and jackets because we're not and never have been expensive ski clothes types. Laughable hairstyles that mark the moment as the 90s and us as much younger, chins up, smirks on a bit lordly, but above all, we're happy, we're skiing, and from the looks of it, we're done and stopping by for a snap before the drive home. Unless I'm forgetting something, it is my last ski trip to this very day. I remember the skiing, chasing each other down those nice intermediate blue square trails with a little curb but not too much slope, so that 30-something dudes who ski maybe once a winter can showboat without too much danger. Starting with the beginning green dot trails just once or twice to get going, easy enough to feed the overconfidence that later yields a spectacular crash or two on the intermediate trails. Those trails begin to feel a little more advanced as afternoon shadows creep across, turning what had been granular snow into crusty ice, which will cause you to catch an edge and remind you of who you really are, Mr. Big Shot. Another wipeout when, absurdly, I decide to try a Black Diamond run and don't navigate a single mogul. I'm lying on my back, grinning in the pot below the very first one, before I remove my skis and crab walk to the edge of the trees. Then a long walk of shame, crunching down through months of rhyme, laughing at myself for acting a fool. But hold on. Snow. I want to talk about snow, the making of snow. So let's start with snizzle. On a more recent visit to Sugarloaf, or rather Sugar Mountain, I see next to the lift ticket, next to the lift line, an information sheet that reads, snizzle possible till early afternoon. But Gunther Jokel, the Austrian owner and de facto head snowmaker at the resort, doesn't want to talk about snizzle, leaving out all the tropes about how many words the Inuit, and people who make snow for a living, supposedly have for snow. Gunther avoids using the made-up term, though it must be said the tiny feather-like drops of snow that whirled in the air as I'd earlier approached Sugar Mountain by car struck me as exactly the snow equivalent of a thin drizzle. So, snizzle. I'm here at the resort to learn about the process of snowmaking, and as the therapists say, I am conflicted, which is not unusual for the northerner down south that I am when the topic of snow comes up. Not conflicted about skiing, mind you. I'm certain that I would no longer bounce cheerfully from a wipeout, so I'll leave that to the overconfident guys who fill the lodge. nor am I conflicted about response. Regarding plowing and driving, I heap scorn on those northerners who heap scorn on the southern response to snow. Do you think we should buy and maintain garages full of plows for our twice-a-season snows? Then quit complaining when it snows and everything shuts down. Do you think Buffalo would effortlessly prepare for and withstand a hurricane? Then quit criticizing southern snow response. On the other hand, the half-inch or almost-inch snows that elicit squeals from children and sighs from adults? I confess that when I first moved down here, I rolled my eyes. This isn't snow, I would say. A lifetime of lake-effect blizzards in my rearview mirror. Then an editor sent me out to do a weather story one snowy-ish rally day, and my hostility evaporated. Snow still hisses when it falls among the silent pines, inch or foot, north or south. I scolded myself for being a snowvenist and pledged to do better. So when the opportunity to visit the snowmaking infrastructure at Sugar Mountain arose, I bundled up and drove across the state. I love snow, and I love infrastructure. So in some ways, my return to Sugar Mountain is a dream come true. First, the snizzle sets up an instant internal hot chocolate wiggle. Then I enter the lodge, which smells like wet skiers, as all ski lodges do, and happily sit for some time with Gunther. If he doesn't like snizzle, Gunther admits that he talks about gropel, the more granular snow, and corn snow, which is the granularized version after it's on the ground. But really, we just use the word snow, he says, and begins waxing, if not lyrical, then technical about snowmaking. He explains how, for beginning skiers, made snow is actually better than natural snow. Man-made snow is denser. Natural snow, you could catch an edge, he says. Hardly anybody breaks a leg anymore, which helps explain that run of mine 3 decades ago. Plus, he says, made snow lasts longer. And where does this made snow come from? Positioned along the slopes of Sugar Mountain are dozens of snow guns which automatically kick on when the temperature dips to 29 degrees. A pipe network and enormous pumps deliver pressurized water to the blowers. There, the water is atomized, mixed with pressurized air, and blown out over the slopes. From his laptop, Gunther checks, or rather clicks through big screens above his desk. It looks like a SCADA system. That's supervisory control data and data acquisition. For those who are not infrastructure nerds, as complete as those for small-town water systems. About 4 or 5 miles of water and airlines can pump thousands of gallons of water a minute with 5 air compressors that can work as hard as the water pumps. A little extra water in the mix makes the snow stick better, which is helpful for building the base. A little less water makes it more powdery, so no skier doesn't love that powder. But if you want to talk snowmaking, you need to leave the lodge and go out and see it being made. So, snowmaker Dave McManus outfits me in skier-style overalls and takes me out onto the slopes where we visit snow guns, many of which sit on sleds. Each one sounds like a 737 and sprays out a freezing mist of particles whose quality Dave checks by sticking his arm in front of the blower and examining the particles in the creases of his jacket. He can check size, quality, and how they clump, and then he can adjust the snow gun by snow gun. It's noisy and messy, but it's also kind of miraculous. There's about 10 feet of snow on Sugar Mountain that Dave's crew made themselves, snow that drives the mountain economy during the winter. Roaring machinery churning out industrial snow may lack charm, but still snow. I love this capacity, and I love the cheerful, burly, let's do this way that snowmakers go about their business. And I don't blame skiers for loving the fact that snowmakers do this and that they do it so well. But snow, When I approached Sugar Mountain earlier in the day, it appeared as an island of production snow in a snow mountainscape distinctly lacking in white. It felt kind of weird when brought out, which brought out my latent snowvinism. I grew up in snow country, and when the snow came, I would wait until nighttime and locate a streetlight. Then I'd sit and watch through the window, sit and absorb as snow filtered silently down through the cone of light that the streetlight cast. No jet engine roar, no industrial systems, just the ineluctable magic of the world. For a moment, choosing silence, making a transformation elegant almost beyond description. I know, it's not fair to compare ski slope generated snow with the glitter globe magic of childhood memories. It's pure snowvinism. Moreover, although my sons have grown up with at least a few Piedmont snows most winters, I do fear for a world when snow is in short supply. So it's a comfort that snowmakers like Gunther Jokel and Dave McManus are on the job, keeping skiers on the slopes and piling up 10 feet of soft base to cushion them when they must go astray. One day, maybe my sons will ski themselves and go on skiing trips with their crews. If they do, they'll surely have a few unforgettable wipeouts and maybe a picture or two and memories that will last a lifetime. Sugar Mountain Ski Resort is in Sugar Mountain, North Carolina, skisugar.com. And boy, that story brought back a lot of memories of skiing Mount Sunapee in New Hampshire. And finally, the science of snow. I don't know we'll get all the way through this. In fact, I'm pretty sure we won't. But let's give it a try. The science of snow. Elizabeth Gardner grew up fascinated by the hexagonal flakes that fell outside her Raleigh home. Today, as a triangle area meteorologist, she helps her community brace for the big one, written appropriately enough by her co-worker, Brian Mims. Little plastic saucers swoosh past me, cutting endless grooves on a snow-covered hillside in Raleigh. I'm standing in the thick of it all, dodging renegade sledders and listening to WRAL-TV meteorologist Elizabeth Gardner in my earpiece as she keeps the triangle area updated on what's to come. She's reporting on the melting that's sure to occur by noon and the warming trend that will settle in for over the weekend. The anchors back in the studios soon pitch to me, the rosy-cheeked television reporter wearing a goofy knit cap to deliver the all-important sledding conditions here at Dorothea Dix Park. Snow and other big weather events always inspire in me a newfound respect for my meteorological colleagues, like Gardner. Their stamina to stay on the air for hours, their deftness in explaining the science of weather in terms that we can understand, and their utterly likable demeanor through it all. Nearly 2 years after that dazzling day at the park, I'm sitting in the warmth of WRAL's Weather Center watching Gardner at work. With a few minutes to kill before her next live broadcast, she opens a bag of organic popcorn, pours a few morsels onto a sheet of paper, and takes a swig of sugary Mountain Dew. "Full strength, baby," she says, flashing a TV-ready smile. "That's my breakfast of champions." Elizabeth Gardner about her choice of breakfast. She runs, she skis, she snowboards, and she's raising two teenagers. Right now, she's sitting in front of several glowing monitors, one with a map displaying temperatures from Roxborough to Clinton, and another showing scattered showers from Oxford to Roanoke Rapids. She's wearing a pink tie-neck dress that really pops on TV. Gardner's been at work under the blinding lights of the studio since 3:45 this morning, building graphics and forecasting the weather. After 17 years as the meteorologist for WRAL's weekday morning news, Gardner has her routine down to a science. She can be eating a snack, tapping at her keyboard, and talking about her kids' soccer schedule, all while listening for the floor director to call out, "Lizzie, you'll be at the BAM BAM is the colorful acronym for the very large monitor on the studio floor. She strides over to the screen, stands before the camera, and delivers a 10-second preview of the forecast. Then she returns to her desk and picks up where she left off. When you have 24 live appearances, including teases and main weather segments, during 4.5 hours of news, 5 mornings a week, this stuff becomes second nature. Gardner's deep love of nature and the childlike wonder that she still experiences at the sight of snow are what inspired her to study meteorology. She grew up in Raleigh, but yearned to live among the snow-capped mountains of Colorado that she's heard about on her John Denver records. She enrolled at the University of Colorado, earned a journalism degree, then spent a few months as a self-described ski bum. After goading from her dad, she landed a real job as a TV reporter back home in North Carolina. She worked in the news department at WGHP in Greensboro before realizing early on that she lacked the appetite to spend a career covering politics and crime. When she got the chance to take a job as a weathercaster in Wilmington, Gardner found her calling. This was the mid-90s when TV stations increasingly sought bona fide meteorologists to deliver the forecast. Gardner needed to learn more about weather before speaking on it extemporaneously for 3.5 minutes at a clip, so she signed up for 3 years of meteorological courses. Weather is cool because it's the study of how things work, Gardner says. She's moved over to a sofa with a view of the station's front entrance. Outside, clouds hint at the showers that she's forecasted to arrive by lunchtime. Everyone wants to know when it's going to rain, she says. It was really fun to learn when and why it was going to rain, and I love snow. She remembers snowfalls that were real doozies during her childhood in the 1970s. That decade saw a cooling trend in North America that produced below normal temperatures and snowy winters across the state. To be a kid growing up with that snow, there was nothing better, Gardner says. School was canceled and the whole family would stay home. We'd all go sledding. She smiles, her voice lifting as if she's telling a story to a group of children. I feel like people don't want to let that go. Everybody wants that surprise vacation day. When it snows these days, it's no vacation for Gardner. As winter weather sets in, WREL suspends its regular programming, and those of us who report the news are dispatched for on-the-scene broadcasts. The days are long and repetitive, but Gardner thrives on it. That little girl, wide-eyed grin, at the freshly fallen snow on pine boughs and oak limbs across Raleigh, still lives within her. I've never grown out of loving the snow, she says. I still think it's so beautiful. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it, that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org, and on iTunes. If you have any comments or questions, please call the studios, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.